केलेला क्रमांक सध्या दुसऱ्या कॉलवर व्यस्त आहे. कृपया लाईनवर राहा.
हरे कृष्ण आलक्य माताजी. येस येस थँक्यू फॉर जॉईनिंग. या या सो जीव गोस्वामी हॅज स्पेसिफिकली यु नो ही हॅज डेडिकेटेड वन एंटायर संदर्भा टू प्रूव्ह दॅट वाय भागवतम इज अवर यु नो द मोस्ट प्रॉमिनंट एव्हिडन्स इवन अमॉंग्स द फोर वेदिक लिटरेचर्स द भागवतम इज द अल्टिमेट ऑथॉरिटी ऑन ऑल ऑफ देम. ओके सो सो इन द भागवतम देर इज नो मेन्शन ऑफ श्रीमती राधाराणी. And because of that, you know, there are a lot of questions raised that why she is not mentioned directly. So obviously, actually, the name of Radharani is mentioned in the Bhagavatam. So if you remember, there is one slok which talks about Anaradita, that here is a gopi whose worship is the best. So if, in the Rasa, when Krishna leaves all the gopis and then he goes, you know, with Radharani, so in that particular reference Sukhdev Goswami mentions the word anaradita. Anaradita means the devotee who is worshipping Krishna, the topmost devotee who worships the Lord. Okay, so that is actually another name of Srimati Radharani. So he has used that name. Now the acharyas explain there are three primary reasons for why, you know, why the name of Radharani is not directly mentioned. So first of all, because there was a mixed crowd in the assembly. Actually, the first reason is that if Sukhdev Goswami had taken the name of Radha, he could have gone into ecstasy, Mahabhav. And if he could have gone into ecstasy, it would have taken 6 months minimum to recover back to normal condition. And as we all know that Maharaj Parikshit had only 7 days to live, right? So obviously, you know, he couldn't take the name Radharani directly. Now, why Sukhdev Goswami would have gone into ecstasy? See, one thing you have to know that Sukhdev Goswami, although he is in the category of impersonalist, because, you know, initially he was an impersonalist, and later on when Vyasdev was narrating the pastimes of the Lord, so then, you know, he got attracted to the transcendental qualities of the Lord and then he became a devotee. So this is one aspect of understanding who is Sukhdev Goswami. But there is a spiritual understanding also, because Sukhdev Goswami is also eternal associate of the Lord. In fact, he is one of the pet parrots of Srimati Radharani, called as Sukha. Okay, so that Sukhdev Goswami incarnated, that Sukha parrot incarnated as Sukhdev Goswami. Okay, so so obviously, you know, all this is Leela only, Leela of the Lord. You know, or like how Sukhdev Goswami is impersonal initially and then he becomes devotee of the Lord. So if, now being a pet parrot of Srimati Radharani, being very intimate to Radharani, you know, and being seen all the pastimes of the Lord with Radha, you know, so if he could have called the name of Radharani, he could have gone into Mahabhav. Okay, so that is one of the reasons, you know, he did not mention. Second reason is that because the crowd in the assembly was mixed, not everyone was pure devotee. So he did not want to make the name of Radharani become cheap in that assembly. Okay, only pure devotees, you know, they can understand the tattva of Radharani. Okay, not all of them can understand. And third is that, you know, when we cover something, you know, if there is a treasure or if there is something which is very extremely important thing, and if we cover that with, you know, over the top, then its significance will increase more and more. Okay, so because all are eager to know what is inside the cover, correct? So the value of that will increase multiple times. Okay, so these are the three reasons the acharyas use why Srimati Radharani's name is not directly mentioned in Bhagavatam. Okay, so now if you see, acharyas like Vishwanatha Thakur, Sanatan Goswami, Jeev Goswami, all of them, you know, they have, even if you see Srila Prabhupada, you know, in the Krishna book, Prabhupada has given the name of Radharani directly. If you have read, if anyone has read Krishna book a couple of times, then one can easily see that Prabhupada himself actually, you know, also revealed the name of Radharani. So it is very interesting actually. So you see, all the acharyas, you know, they have given the commentary in the Bhagavatam slokas, and very easily it can be seen that Radharani is always present. In fact, you know, interesting thing to note down is that each and every verse of Bhagavatam, it actually does talk about Radha and Krishna. So if one has the eyes to see that, one has the realization to realize that, then one can see that very clearly. Okay, each and every verse of Bhagavatam. Okay, so this is the significance of Bhagavatam.
Prabhuji, 1 minute.
Yeah.
1 minute, 1 minute. So yes, like when you're saying this, this statement, that every verse in Bhagavatam talks about Srimati Radha and in Krishna, can you give some understanding of this, like, do you have an example, like, can you show some connection for one verse? That way, yeah. When we are reading, now that you have introduced this perspective, at least we'll endeavor to, try and read it more carefully, intently, and pray that we are able to understand that. How Radha and Krishna are present in every verse. I don't know if it's possible, like, if you have any realization or, you can share someone else's realization, please do.
See, basically, obviously, I don't have direct realization because I'm not on that stage. So, but the acharyas, they explain like that. So one thing is that you have to accept what the acharyas say. And then it is not so difficult to understand also because Sanskrit, language, it has multiple meanings. The grammar of, the Sanskrit language is very unique. And one can actually get multiple meanings from the same particular word. Okay. So for example, now the first verse of the first canto of the first chapter of Bhagavatam, which is what? Janma Dasya Yata Tene Hridaya Brahma Adi Kavaye, if you remember that sloka. So now, interestingly, you see that particular sloka is the beginning of the Bhagavatam. It is actually hidden form of Gayatri Mantra. Okay, because at the end, you see there is Prachodaya term in that. Okay, so actually, the Bhagavatam has revealed the essence of Gayatri also in that first sloka. And Vishwanathaka Thakur explains, he has given, a huge commentary on that, on the first chapter, the first canto, first sloka. And he explains that this particular sloka actually, somehow he relates to the Rasila. So that is the Rasic way to see things. He's a Ras Acharya, the highest Acharya of Ras in spiritual world, Vishwanathaka Thakur. He's actually incarnation of Vinod Vallari Manjari. Okay, so he talks about the first verse in a very, very, Rasic way. Okay, and if you read the, how he has translated and how he has commented on that sloka, you'll be amazed to see that. So these Acharyas, they can see everywhere Radha and Krishna. And since Bhagavatam is the manifestation of the body of the Lord, so that is the reason. It is full about Krishna only. See, starting from first verse till the end verse of the 12th canto. It is from starting from the lotus feet of the Lord and it goes to the head of the Lord. Correct? So anything that contains Krishna obviously will contain Radha also in that. So it is just a matter of identifying the words and, relating that to how basically, it talks about. So this is what the Acharya and Goswami say. Okay. And this is what I have just given you one example of the first canto, first chapter, first verse. How it refers to Radha and Krishna and how it refers to the Rasila pastime. Okay, so how exactly it refers to Rasila pastime, then that, you'll have to refer to the first verse commentary by Vishwanathaka Thakur. And he has given a big commentary on that. So, so does that answer your question, Guru?
Yeah, it does. And another question is like, when we talk about the tattvas, so God Krishna is Vishnu Tattva. Vishnu Tattva is the category of God. There is the Jivas, Jiva Tattva. Lord Shiva is, they say, is a Tattva of his own. Radharani, Radharani, what is her Tattva? Like, is she also Vishnu Tattva? Or...
No, this is
a completely different category.
Well, I think we have covered this point earlier that she is a Ladini Shakti. So she is the energy. So all these Vishnu Tattvas, they are energetic. And Radharani is energy of the Lord. So Radharani is representing the Ladini Shakti of the Lord. Okay. So you see, all the other gopis, then the Manjaris, then the Dwarka Mahishis, then the then Sita, then in the Vaikunthas, the Lakshmis. They are all expansion of Srimati Radharani to serve the Lord, because Krishna expands like that, you know, in Chaturvya, and then in Vaikunthas, you know, as Vishnu. So then Srimati Radharani will also expand like that to give pleasure to the Lord. Okay, so all these gopis, you know, the Mahishis, Lakshmis, they are all expansion of Radharani, and they are all Shaktis, Ladini Shakti of the Lord, internal potency. Okay, so yeah, so any question or any comment?
So when as Sadhakas, we are striving to, we are endeavoring for Radharani's mercy, that he is the leader of the devotees, you can put it that way. Like, devotion service is completely under her, and she is the Ladini Shakti. So, like, as we are jivas, and we are Vatsa Jivas, conditioned souls. So, when we completely become, like, you know, when we completely surrender, we become, like, we give up all our material desires and surrender to the, you know, the, on the path of devotional service, become completely devoted. Do we also come in alignment? See, I'm not using the right words, but you can clarify, clear that conception. That do we also fall in alignment with the Ladini Shakti? Like, we are the marginal energies, right? So, as Jiva, like, and we are classified as Jiva Tattva. So, what is the understanding? Like, are we aligning ourselves to the Ladini Shakti when we become completely surrendered, when we have attained prema, or bhava prema?
Yeah, so, see, the Jiv Tattva is always Jiv Tattva. It cannot become the Ladini Shakti, or it cannot become, you know, it cannot change its identity, basically, its designation. So it cannot become Vishnu Tattva, neither it can become the Ladini Shakti. Okay, so Jiv Tattva always remains Jiv Tattva. But when Ladini Shakti enters our heart, Srimati Radharani's potency, then we achieve prema. So you remember, if you had discussed last time, that at the stage of bhava, there is the Samvit potency and the Ladini Shakti mixed. So that is the reason why bhava stage is compared to the ray of a sun. So one ray of the sun. So you know, it is like that. So it is very potent. But then, you know, prema is like the sun. So that is the difference between bhava and prema. So prema is like, you know, you have attained full perfection. Bhava is just a shadow of that love, original love. Okay. Yeah, so anyone would like to, like, do you have any question or comment?
Prabhuji, what is Sukhdev Goswami's position then, with context to his stage of devotion?
With context to which stage?
Yeah, which stage of devotion is he in? You kind of mentioned he was an impersonalist, but then again, I'm confused, because if he was an impersonalist, then how could he have gone into ecstasy if he had spoken about Radharani?
Yeah, so, see, just like, you know, Jai and Vijay, they are eternal associates of the Lord. So they come down and they become demons to assist in the pastime of the Lord. So similarly, some devotees, you know, they, apparently they, you know, externally they might behave like that, but internally they are always in their original state, right? So like, for example, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, he is a Nitya Siddha, right? He's Amal Manjari in the spiritual world. But if you see, when, during the early life pastimes of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was eating fish also, and he was not a devotee actually. So it took some time for him to come to bhakti. And later on, you know, he became a perfect, exemplary sadhaka as such. But in his internal state, he was always Kamal Manjari. So he was a Nitya Siddha always. So this is what happens. Some devotees, they will take some role just to assist in the pastimes of the Lord. See, now, why he was impersonal? Because the Lord wanted to glorify the position of a devotee, and he wanted to establish the superiority of devotion compared to the impersonalism. And that is the reason why, if you remember last time in the class, I told that Jnani, that the Bhagavad Gita slok is referring to, is actually, it means devotee. And why we took example of, in that example itself, we have taken example of the Kumaras and of Sukhdev Goswami itself. So why? Because by giving this example, Jiva Goswami wanted to, or Rup Goswami wanted to convey the message that even the impersonalists are attracted to transcendental qualities of the Lord. So that is the reason this example was given actually. So although falling into a category of impersonalism, but then later on becoming a devotee. So that is why this example is there in the Jnani. So Jnani is actually a devotee in that particular verse. Okay, so does that answer your question, Mataji?
I'm not 100%, but if I can repeat what you just said, is that he was playing the role of an impersonalist to give more prominence to devotion as the outcome.
Yeah, I mean, see, all these Nitya Siddhas, they come to assist the Lord in various ways. So some will take the role of, like for example, now Prabhupada in Transcendental Diary, Harisarish Prabhu's, this glorification of Srila Prabhupada. So in that particular, one of the instances, one disciple asked Prabhupada that was Duryodhana a devotee of the Lord? Because it seems that Balram actually favored Duryodhana. So Prabhupada replied, yes, he was a devotee of Balram. Otherwise, why would Balram favor him? Okay, so then the devotees asked Prabhupada. So that means that Balram was playing the part of, Duryodhana was playing the part of a demon. And Prabhupada said, yes. So this is what we understand, that the devotees, they have different roles to play in the pastimes of the Lord. So Sukhdev Goswami is used as an impersonalist example who comes and who becomes, a great devotee of the Lord. Now, see, that is very, and one more, one more thing that actually comes out of Sukhdev Goswami's example is that he is the narrator of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a very, very big thing. Okay, because Bhagavad Puran is the the topmost Puran, and one can ask the question that who narrated this Bhagavatam, and then we know that Sukhdev Goswami. So he, the Lord very nicely, very intelligently used him as an example of some impersonalist who actually later became a devotee, and who even reached the stage of highest levels of bhakti, and because of the devotion, he had recited Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is an example of an impersonalist completely dedicated to Lord. Okay, so similar thing happened with the four Kumaras also. The four Kumaras, if you remember the past time, when they entered Vishnulok, that time, they smelled the fragrance of the tulsi leaves at the feet of the Lord. And just by smelling that fragrance, what to speak of hearing about the qualities of the Lord, just by smelling that fragrance, their mind changed. They lost composure. And they got so much attracted to the qualities of the Lord that they forgot their impersonalism and they become devotees of the Lord. So this is how actually it happens. So many, many instances are there. Then we also see that Shankachud demon in Krishna Leela. If you remember, there is a demon called Shankachud who wanted to kidnap the gopis when Krishna and Balram were there. They were performing their intimate pastime with the gopis. And then this Shankachud demon comes, he's friend of the treasure of the demigods, Kuvera. And he wanted to kidnap, he started kidnapping the gopis, and then the gopis started yelling, Krishna, protect us, Balram, where are you? So then Krishna, he started running behind him, and then, he caught him, and then he just punched him, and he died. So now this Shankachud demon is an expansion of Sridhama Sakha in the spiritual world, according to Garg Samhita. Okay, so you see, the Lord, he always enjoys pastimes. And if he has to fight someone, then that person, those persons should be very, very potent, very powerful. In fact, in one sense, they should be equal to the Lord in terms of quality. They should be associates. Because who can fight with the Lord? Who can give pleasure to the Lord? Only his associates, So these all devotees, sometimes they come in different guise, and then, they have different leelas. And even in Mathura, if you see, when Krishna was entering the arena of the wrestling match, so that time, the the wrestlers, their name were Chanur and Mushtik. Remember? So Chanur and Mushtik also, the Garg Samhita explains that they were actually great sages, and you know, one of them was king actually in the past life. And because of some, you know, something went somewhere wrong, so they were cursed by some sage, and then they had to come as demons or you know, to fight with the Lord. So I don't remember the exact reason why they were cursed, what was the pastime, but this is I'm just giving examples to connect, you know, so different personalities, how they appear in Krishna Leela, and you know, just to assist, just to give pleasure to the Lord. Okay.
So,
okay, once again, Jugnu Madhuri, does that answer your question in detail now?
Yes, thank you, Prabhuji.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Aditra.
Yeah, it was actually a continuation to what you're saying. So, he was also remembering the Lord, but he was remembering the Lord in an unfavorable way. As an enemy.
Yeah.
But he was constantly remembering him. So
yeah.
Is there also he was Kala Nemeni, I think that was the character, right? Like
Yes.
Killed by Vishnu. So
yeah.
Does he also have the position of a devotee who is like, you know, having that kind of rasa in what is that called? Bhayanak rasa, I think.
Not all of them. Some of them are associates of the Lord. They just come down to assist the Lord. So they will come in different disguise. So Kal Nemi was Kans, originally he was in the previous life, he was Kal Nemi. He was incarnation of Kal Nemi. So I have not heard, or I don't see any reference if he was a devotee of the Lord. But this Duryodhan was, you know, Prabhupada personally said, and I think someone also mentioned, some devotee mentioned that he was, what Prabhupada said was correct. He was actually, even by Madhvacharya in his commentary in Mahabharata, he says that Duryodhana actually was, you know, associate of Balram. But now, interestingly, you know, there is, as of now, I have not seen any Shastric reference for this. Like, according to Gat Samhita, actually Duryodhana was expansion of Kali. So now, you know, I don't know. I have not heard about any Shastric reference that Duryodhana was eternal associate of the Lord. But both things are possible. You know, see, when Duryodhana comes, you know, the expansion of Kali can also enter the body of Duryodhana, that original associate, when he comes down. So the expansion of Kali can also enter the body. So that is one possibility. And second possibility is that in one particular yuga, it might be the eternal associate coming down. And next particular yuga, it might be the expansion of Kali. Okay, so these are different types of explanations the Acharya gives whenever there is a contradiction. Okay, yeah, so any further question or any comment? Okay, all right. So now coming back to that original sloka of Bhagavad Gita. So then the impersonal as Jnani is actually referring to a devotee, as Jiva Goswami explains. And this is also supported by Ramanujacharya in his commentary. But Sridhar Swami does not give this particular interpretation. He says that this Jnani refers to the impersonalist, who is the, you know, knower of the Atma. The Jnani means the knower of Atma. Okay, so now, see, there is one more important point about Sridhar Swami is that Sridhar Swami is the original commenter on the Bhagavatam, the first commentator on the Bhagavatam, correct? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also accepted him as an authority. So if you remember in Gaur Leela, when Vallabhacharya came, apparently, you know, he rejected Sridhar Swami's interpretation of the Bhagavatam because Vallabhacharya thought that he has given impersonal commentaries on the Bhagavatam. Okay, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually criticized and, you know, he chastised Vallabhacharya for this. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted Sridhar Swami as the original commentator on the Bhagavatam. But now here we see that Jiva Goswami is differing from Sridhar Swami. Okay, Yeah, so we have to understand one important point, that actually the acharyas explained that Sridhar Swami purposefully inserted some impersonal ideas in his commentaries just to attract the Mayavadis, because Shankaracharya had already established Mayavadism throughout India. Okay, after Buddha had appeared, so then Shankaracharya came, and then, you know, he had some role to perform. So he had spread Mayavadism in the entire, you know, region of India. So then, to attract some of them, because, you know, as we had also discussed in our CC class, that Shankaracharya also at the same time, you know, he gave the final conclusion of the Vedas. Although he had given the impersonal aspect of knowledge, but at the same time, indirectly, he also stated many times that Govinda is the supreme and he is transcendental. So he is not subjected to the material nature, laws of material nature. Narayana paravrattat. You must have heard this sloka many times in Shankaracharya's commentary, that Narayana is transcendental. And then you remember that Govinda Muramate, Bhaja Govinda Muramate, that original sloka, prayers by Shankaracharya. So in that also, if you see, he has, you know, actually portrayed Krishna as a supreme god. Okay, and interestingly, Shankaracharya also wrote Jagannath Ashtakam, and he has also written about, you know, Govinda Ashtakam. He has also composed that prayer, and in both the prayers, you know, he's talking about the gopis' love with Krishna. If you see that Jagannath Ashtakam, Nayana Pata Gamini Bhava Tume, that is actually, if you see the original composer is Shankaracharya. That is what they write, Adi Shankaracharya. So it is very interesting that even though he was preaching Mayavadism, but, you know, finally, you know, he also gave that knowledge of bhakti at the end. And some of his disciples, they became devotees later on, but many of them, you know, they are still Mayavads. So Shankaracharya, you know, he had a role to perform, and Sridhar Swami later on, just to attract the impersonalists towards the Bhagavatam, to read the Bhagavatam, he added some few points here and there, which actually kind of, you know, gives some impersonal idea about the Lord. Okay, so that was his actually purpose of doing that. But the main theme of the Bhagavatam, you know, the main sections of Bhagavatam, which deal with personal aspect of the Lord, that he has given as it is. So there he has not done any kind of changes. In fact, many, you know, slokas, he has expressed his love and devotion to the Lord. So it is very clear that actually he was a great devotee of the Lord, but he just wanted to attract the Mayavadis. Okay. And one more thing is that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu originally appeared to all the acharyas, Shankaracharya and the four Vaishnav Sampradaya acharyas, so that time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had appeared to Shankaracharya in a dream. This is prior to Mahaprabhu's appearance, when Shankaracharya was present. So that time, you know, he told Shankaracharya in the dream that I will be coming soon, and your role, you are doing it, you know, but you don't enter Navdeep Mandal, because Navdeep Mandal is not different from Vraj Bhumi, and it is my own place. So you should not enter there, and you should not spoil your, you know, not spoil the mood of bhakti with your Mayavad philosophy. Okay, at the same time, interestingly, if you see, although Shankaracharya did comment on the Bhagavad Gita, but he never touched Bhagavatam. That's really something, you know, very interesting, because most of the acharyas, you see, you know, the first work they will do is like the Srimad Bhagavatam, because it's very interesting, you know, it's very fascinating. So many of them have commented on the Bhagavatam, but Shankaracharya did not comment. You know, all the major acharyas, previous acharyas, they've all commented on Bhagavatam, most of them. But Shankaracharya has not commented, he has not touched the Bhagavatam. So this means that, you know, as we know that Shankaracharya is incarnation of Sada, you know, Shiva, and he was ordered by the Lord to preach this Mayavad philosophy according to time, place, circumstance, to bring the Vedas back. Okay. Yeah, so any question or any comment? So this is how Jiva Goswami establishes that, and by quoting Ramanujacharya, and then Vishwanathacharya Thakur also supports Jiva Goswami's conclusion. And he says that, yeah, so this Jnani refers to a devotee who knows about the Lord, who has knowledge about the Lord. So now see, sometimes, you know, there is a mixing of Jnani generally refers to impersonalists, because they are the ones who seek knowledge. But then knowledge can also mean something related to the Lord. Okay, so this is how they have commented. And Vishwanath Chakra Thakur says that... Vishwanath Chakra Thakur, he says that... this jnani, this particular jnani, actually he attains shantaras in the spiritual world. So because, you know, his bhakti is mixed with jnana. So this is the first step of, you know, towards bhakti, actually. Okay. Yeah, so any comments or any question? Okay, and as I said earlier, that this example of Kumaras is given in the category of Jnani just to prove the superiority of pure bhakti over Jnana. Okay, so after becoming devotees, they were performing Vedi bhakti. Okay, now there is a fifth example of pure devotion. And which is that example? Anyone knows?
Have the same opulence as the Lord?
Sorry?
Having the same opulence as the Lord?
Sorry, Mataji, I think your voice is breaking. Not able to hear.
I was saying... having the same opulence as the Lord?
Oh, okay. That we'll discuss later. So, example of pure bhakti represents someone who has, you know, fully surrendered to the Lord. So, not even tinge of any kind of desire. And this point will, you know, I will explain in detail because the acharyas have given nice commentary about it. Any devotee who is following that the principles of the verse Anya Bilasita Sunyam Jnana Karmadi Anavritam Anukulena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Ruttama. So whoever is following this particular verse, they are all examples of pure devotee. So but here it is given, you know, the example of Narad Muni is given, that he was actually representing pure bhakti. So now if you see, Narad Muni attained the association of the devotees Mahabhagavats in previous life. And by taking the remnants of their prasadam, you know, and then hearing from them every day, you know, so somehow he got that desire, you know, that greed to serve the Lord. So then he became a pure devotee later on. Okay. Yeah, so now... So then Prabhupada, in the third chapter, he talks about... So till this point, we are discussing about the third chapter, like, because we are not able to finish last class, so we are just continuing the third chapter only. And so then Prabhupada says that, you know, one who is free from bodily concept of life is eligible to enter in pure devotional service. Okay. So then Prabhupada says that, and this is what actually, you know, these are original shlokas of Rupa Goswami, which Prabhupada is just translating in his Nectar of Devotion. So then Rupa Goswami says that how can pure devotional service arise when the witch of desire for enjoyment and liberation is there in the heart? Okay, because it is so strong that, because pure devotional service is free of any of these things. It does not have any tendency to enjoy sense gratification and no desire for liberation. It is completely pure. Okay, so now Prabhupada talks about the three kinds of happiness. And last time, Sarojya Mataji and Sakshiman Prabhu, Sakshiman Prabhu asked this question that the three kinds of happiness, Prabhupada is calling them material happiness, spiritual happiness and devotional happiness. So what is the difference? Was saying that what is the difference between spiritual and devotional happiness? It seems to be like, you know, the same thing. So then what is the difference?
Spiritual happiness, what I understand is spiritual happiness is what is experienced when there is no presence of material distress, but there is not a positive experience of this that comes out of loving exchanges, reciprocation with the Lord. For that to happen, that is the next step. That's the next stage of happiness where we are able to derive happiness through service. So spiritual happiness is just like Brahma Bhuta, knowing that I'm not the body, I'm Brahman.
Yeah.
And not feeling the material distresses per se. But devotional service goes like, it is bliss, it is ananda, it is that pleasure that is derived from, you know, getting reciprocation from the Lord when one renders service to Him.
Yes, perfect. So spiritual happiness here refers to the happiness of impersonalism. So desire to merge with the Brahman. Okay, so that is actually here, that is the meaning of spiritual happiness. And devotional happiness means, see, that is the reason why Prabhupada, he always translated devotion, wherever the devotion is there, where bhakti term refers in the sloka, you know, he has translated to devotional service. He is not just translated to devotion. He has translated to devotional service. Because devotion means it has to be accompanied with service. It cannot be just devotion, because then it becomes a sentiment. Okay, so it should have service attitude. Practical service has to be there. Yeah. So now, you know, then Prabhupada says further that devotees should never desire bhakti and mukti. And there are many, many evidences in Shastra, which actually the next chapter quotes many, many, many Shastric evidences about the exalted glories of pure devotional service compared to liberation. So liberation is like, you know, actually, in one sense, a devotee will feel that liberation is like a hellish position for him. He never desires liberation. He only wants pure devotional service. Okay, and then the Shastra also says, Bhagavatam says, that liberation stands at the door with folded hands for a devotee who is, you know, completely pure and who is serving the Lord. So then there are many evidences from Shastra, which we'll describe in the fourth chapter. Okay, now, see, interesting point, Jiva Goswami mentions, or I think Vishwanatha Thakur mentions, is that he says that, you know, in the category of the earth, artharthi jigyasu, okay, so whoever is seeking material happiness, whoever is seeking relief from distress, and whoever is seeking knowledge, okay, so now these three categories of people, they must attain Sukriti to perform devotional service. So if they don't attain Sukriti, then, you know, they have to take repeated birth and death. But the Jnani, he has already attained Sukriti due to previous association. Okay, and that is the reason, actually, you know, his devotional service starts soon. So this is a very interesting point.
So Prabhuji, Prabhupada writes this thing in the third chapter. That's what I was reading, and I was thinking that I'll ask you about this. So he says, without being elevated to the position of a jnani or wise man, no one can stick to the principle of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Exactly. So basically, wise man is the jnani, and as we have already discussed, that jnani refers to the devotee, basically, initial stage of devotion. Okay. Yeah.
Shanta Bhakta, one who is like in the rasa of the Shanta Ras, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, he can progress also to the upper, you know, categories of bhakti, but it just starts, you know, with that particular category.
Okay.
Yeah. So, any comments or any question? So we have ended the third chapter today, and we will continue the fourth chapter now. But before that, any particular question, comment?
Can you revise?
Huh? Yeah.
Can you revise that part?
Can we?
I came late. Can you revise that part, chapter 3?
Sorry, what you're saying is, can we read?
No, can you revise that part, chapter 3?
Revise.
Okay, yeah. maybe
I just
few minutes. Yeah, in few minutes I can do it.
Okay.
because
the recording
is there, so we can also refer to that. But anyways, okay, so see, so in the third chapter, you know, I explained about the Uttama, Madhyama and Kanishtha Adhikari. Then the characteristics of the Uttama Adhikari, then characteristics of Madhyama Adhikari and characteristics of Kanishtha Adhikari. Then we discussed about the four types of devotees who approach the Lord. Okay. And then I was explaining which category, you know, the different examples, they fall into which category. And then we were explaining, I explained about that in detail about the Jnani, which is, you know, the Acharya referred to Jnani as a devotee. Okay. So Kumaras are given as the example of that. So, and then we were also, I discussed, did you join when we were talking about why Sukadeva Goswami did not spoke the name of Radha in Bhagavatam?
No.
Okay. Anyways, you can refer to the recordings, the initial 10 minutes, I think if you can listen, you will get the answer. Yeah, and then we also spoke about the fifth example as Narad Muni. Okay, and then, you know, like how Rupa Goswami mentions that a devotee, he should be free of material desires and should not have desire to liberate in the, you know, Brahman effulgence. And then the glories of pure devotional service, how it is superior to everything. And yeah, so these points we have discussed. Okay. And if you want to know the details, you can hear the recording, the last class recording.
Okay, I got it. Thank you very much.
Okay, no problem. All right, so any comments or any question on the third chapter? Okay, so let's start with the fourth chapter. Okay, so now, what is the reason why devotees do not desire liberation? So there are three reasons why, you know, devotees do not desire liberation. So what is the reason? See, one reason is very common and very logical also. Anyone can say, you know, why do we do not desire liberation? So what is the reason? Huh? What?
You don't want to annihilate your personal identity.
So what do you want to do with that, basically?
Because if you do not have a personality, then you cannot, like, you cannot really enjoy fully. Like, you don't really, you're not able to have relationship. Oh, is someone saying something?
Yeah, someone is saying something. I don't know, it is about the class or it is something else.
Oh, I thought someone wants to speak.
Yeah. I probably there is some disturbance actually, not related to the class.
Okay. So if your identity is destroyed, like it's not really. So I don't think it's complete, like destroyed forever, but it is a state where you do not experience any. Like as we were saying, what is the difference between spiritual happiness and devotional service? So it's like being in a room, like where you're safe, completely safe, but you cannot. So you are at least not. You're not in danger. Like you're not going to be affected by, you know, any kind of, like you're not really subjected to any danger. But then there is no one else in the room, or even if there are, it's like, you know, there is no connection. Like you cannot really connect with anyone.
So what is the meaning of that?
Relationship.
Yeah. So relation means what?
So there is no rasa. I don't know.
Yeah, there is no service.
Okay. There is no rasa. Yeah, service.
Yeah,
I don't like to serve. That's why I couldn't say that word.
Yeah, so you are saying many things, service, but you missed that main word. Yeah, so service is one factor. Then what are the other two reasons? Because as you know, as you were saying, that personality aspect, that, you know, see, it's very logical to understand. Like, if you are alone, as Aritra was saying, that you are alone, then what is the thing that you are going to miss, basically, in a relationship? You are going to miss the person, right?
So enjoyment.
Enjoyment. So that enjoyment comes from service, and it comes from the personal person who is present before us, the personality, the, you know, qualities of that person. So the second aspect is the beauty of the Lord. You know, the second reason, that beauty of the Lord, because Lord is person and his beauty is attracting so much. So that is the reason. You know, liberation, we don't want that. And the last one is the sweetness of the Leela. So obviously in a relationship there will be pastimes, and that's the sweetness of the pastimes is very pleasing to the heart. So these are the three reasons: service, beauty of Lord, and sweetness of Leela. Okay. So these are the reasons. Now in the fourth chapter, you know, you see there is extensive shastric evidence provided. You know, that all devotees of the Lord, they are all praying the same thing. That we don't want liberation, we don't want material desire, we don't want the post of Brahma, we don't want the position of Indra, we just want your pure devotional service, and we just want your the association of your devotees, life after life. So this is the common theme, you know, which is founded in each and every devotee. Okay, so now, so we will go through that, you know, one by one. So first of all, the example is of King Prithu. So, you know, he prays to the Lord. Now, King Prithu is a Saktavesh avatar of the Lord. So, he prays that I desire millions of years so that I can hear glories of the Lord from everywhere, from every person. This is what Jiva Goswami comments, that, you know, he prayed like this because he wanted to hear the glories of Lord from unlimited mouths. So, like that. Then the second example is of Jad Bharat, who left everything for the service of the Lord. You know, his kingdom, his wife, his children, everything he left. Then the third example, Vitrasur example. So Vitrasur prays that he does not even attain, does not even want to attain Dhruv Loka. And Dhruv Loka is actually a local Vaikuntha planet in the material world. Although Dhruv Maharaj, you know, he initially came with material desires, but then later on he became a pure devotee. And the Lord gave him a local Vaikuntha planet, completely dedicated to Dhruva. So that is, that Vaikuntha is actually within the material world. Okay. As you know, that, you know, the Dhruv pole star, it's called as pole star, and that pole star always remains fixed at one place. You see, that never changes, and all the constellations, they move around that pole star. Right? So that is the reason why the you know, the ships and everything, you know, for navigation purpose, they always take the pole star as a reference to navigate. So this pole star is actually Dhruv Loka, Dhruv plant, the planet of Dhruva, which is our local Vaikuntha. Why Vaikuntha? Because the Lord is residing there. Vishnu is residing there. Okay. So now, now these people, you know, they are praying to the Lord, and they even say that, you know, they do not even want, you know, the position of Brahma, Indra, or, you know. So basically, they are actually praying this in the order of decreasing significance. Okay, so Brahma is, you know, a big post in the material world, the biggest post. Then Indra is a lesser post than that. Then, you know, someone is praying that they don't even want Yog Siddhi. And then at the end, they are saying that they don't even want impersonal liberation. So the Acharyas comment that actually they are praying this in the order of decreasing significance. So in one sense, the Yog Siddhi is superior to even impersonal liberation. Okay, why? Why is Yog Siddhi superior to impersonal liberation? So what do you understand by Yog Siddhi, first of all?
Are you talking about Yog Siddhi in terms of, like, attaining those eight mystic perfections?
Correct. Yeah.
Are you talking... Okay, because, like, well, Prabhupada explains and Patanjali explains that a yogi is able to realize, is able to see the personal form form of the Lord in the heart, like the localized Paramatma. So, but the impersonalists, they don't see all those things. They are just about, you know, Brahman, which is not clear, which is undefined. So,
correct.
That's a, like my understanding of it. So you yes. could say there is realization of the personal form.
Yeah, that's true. That's correct. Correct. Yeah. So basically, Yoga Siddhi involves. See, whenever you want some Siddhi, it means that you will be praying to the Lord. So that praying aspect, as I already explained, that karma and jnana also they have, you know, bhakti as a secondary element in that. Okay. So in terms of jnana mishra bhaktas and karma mishra bhaktas, there is bhakti also present in that, but to a minor element. Okay. And similarly, in Yoga Siddhi also, because Yoga Siddhi means attaining the mystic siddhis. So then, obviously, it means that you are praying, you are seeking the, you know, mercy of the Lord to get the siddhis. So it means that you have a personal realization of the Lord. So that is the reason Yoga Siddhi is superior to even impersonalism. Okay. So you, did you understand this point? Any question or any comment?
Can you repeat the sentence from your place, please?
Yeah, so Yoga Siddhi means to attain mystic siddhis, and to, in order, if you want to attain something, then you have to pray to the Lord to get it, right? You have to be dependent on the Lord. So that aspect is an aspect of bhakti. Okay, so there is some aspect of personal realization in that. Okay, and there is some devotion in that. But in terms of impersonal realization, there is no concept of personality of the Lord, and there is no dependence on the Lord. There is no bhakti involved. So that is the reason the Yoga Siddhi is superior to impersonal liberation. Is that okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so any comments or questions?
How do
okay.
we know,
Prabhuji,
that we are in which category?
Okay, so we are in which category? Now, if I had the Siddhi, I could have, you know, come to know which category all of us are. But I don't have the Siddhi. Yeah, so, yes, this is something that we have to see.
But
we are
all conditioned. But you said only the Jnanis are the pure devotees.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they are the devotees, okay, but still, actually real bhakti begins at the stage of Dasyaras. That is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has included from Dasyaras. You know, he has not given Shantaras, because Shantaras has, it does not have active devotional service. Okay, so that's a lower stage actually of devotion. And that is, yeah, Jnani, see, Jnani basically can refer, as you know, we have already discussed, that in particular Bhagavad Gita slok, Jnani is referring to that devotee. Okay, but Jnani can also refer to a Mayavadi or impersonalist who is seeking knowledge and who wants to see the Lord in his heart as Paramatma, you know. So, yeah, so it can refer, you know, to Jnanis, it can refer to devotees also. And so one thing we should all understand, that we come to Krishna consciousness majorly because of artharthi. So these two are the prominent factors why we come to KC, right? But then later on, even if you are coming with these motivations, but if the motivation will change, then we can consider that we are in the path of pure devotion. Okay, and if you are actively engaged in some service, then we can say that, see, that is the reason I repeatedly say this, that sadhana bhakti starts at the stage of Shraddha. And sadhana bhakti itself is like, you know, talking about pure devotional service. So, at the stage of Shraddha till the stage of asakti, you know, it is all about pure devotional service. So, like, so what does it mean, pure devotion? Actually, although there is a lot of anarthas, there is a lot of motivation, ulterior motives in our heart, but the priority, you know, our main priority or the main motivation is to please the Lord. And then along with that, we have many other material desires or, you know, anarthas. So, but with practice of that sadhana, of that bhakti, all these remaining impurities will go away. So you see, because the primary element present in the state of Shraddha is devotion to the Lord, devotional service to the Lord, So that remains same throughout, you know, the stages from Shraddha to Prema. The only difference is that only the desire to serve the Lord increases, you know, and the impurity anarthas will be gone with time. So this is how we can understand. So every one of us has, you know, come mainly because of these two reasons. Some of might have come because of, you know, to get, seek knowledge also. But later on, you know, if our main motivation is to please the Lord, then we are in the right path. But if it is some, if there is some ulterior motive, then that is not good. Then we are not in the right track. Okay. So does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. Not
100%,
but satisfied.
Yeah. So see, we are, okay, now, one time Prabhupada was asked by a reporter that how many pure devotees are there in your movement? And Prabhupada asked his disciple that how many devotees are in our movement? And the disciple said there are about 3,000. And Prabhupada said there are to the reporter that there are 3,000 pure devotees in our movement. Okay, so now you see that actually who was on the level of pure devotion that time? Maybe very, very rarely, you know, very few devotees were there. But Prabhupada said all of them are pure devotees. And then later on, disciples asked Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, you know, why did you say that we are all pure devotees? We are so much struggling on earth. So then Prabhupada said, because your desire to serve the Lord is pure. You have the genuine hankering to serve me, to please me. And that is pure. So with time, everything will become pure. So that is the, you know, so pure devotion, basically pure devotee has various definitions. Okay, a broad definition, and then there is the very specific definition. So specific definition, if you see, that is according to the Shastra. That who is a pure devotee? Those who are free from material desires, who are free from knowledge, impersonal knowledge. So Anya Bilasita Sunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam, who are free from karmic fruitive activities. And the desire is only to please the Lord in the favoring attitude. So they are pure devotees. So this is how we understand, okay? So now we are aspiring to reach that stage in our, you know, process of Krishna consciousness. Okay. So does that help answer your question more?
Yes.
Okay. So any question on this?
No.
So see, one thing we should know that, you know, so that is the reason why the acharyas have given us stages, you know, to understand which level of devotion we are at. You know, at the stage of Shraddha, our faith is very weak. We are Kanishta Adhikaris. You know, then from Shraddha, we associate with devotees, Sadhu Sangh. Then, you know, through that Sadhu Sangh, Bhajan Kriya will start. So Bhajan Kriya starts when you get initiated. Okay, and by doing that Bhajan, by properly, according to the instructions of the Guru, you do the bhajan, then there will be anartha nivritti. So Prabhupada said that 75% of anarthas are destroyed at the stage of nishtha. So if mode of ignorance and passion is gone from your heart completely, then you can understand you are at the level of nishtha. And then the acharyas further say that trinadapi sunichena comes at the stage of nishtha.
Ignorance and?
Passion.
Ignorance and material desire.
Passion, mode of passion and mode of ignorance is gone completely.
Ignorance and passion.
Yeah. So, see, I mean, you know, I could discuss a lot of details in the stages itself, but that will take entire class actually. You know, if we want to discuss this, what symptoms at the stage of Shraddha, then Bhajana Kriya, then Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti, you know, we'll have to take 9 separate classes. For the 9 separate stages. Okay, so these are just this is just an overview actually. How, you know, what are the symptoms at different stages? And then, you know, humility also comes at the stage of nishtha, because without humility you cannot go beyond you cannot attain the higher stages. It's not possible. See, that is the reason humility is the first thing it will come after anartha nivritti. Without humility you cannot even attain nishtha. Because steadiness, wisdom means steadiness. And if you want steadiness in your spiritual life, then you have to be humble. You cannot be proud and, you know, be on the state of steadiness. That's not possible. Because if you don't have humility, then you know, your bhakti will go up and down. That is for sure. So you won't maintain that attitude throughout your life. Okay, so that is the reason nishtha, you know, humility first comes. And then nishtha will come, steadiness. So that is the reason, you see, in the verse of Srinagapi Sunichana, Taro api sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadari. So you can do kirtaniya sadari when you attain humility. Okay, so kirtaniya sadari is actually at the stage of nishtha. So it's a very advanced stage. So you can figure out where we are actually, without even having any siddhis. Right? So for us, our siddhis are basically our acharyas, because they have given us everything. Whatever is required, you know, you go to the acharya's works, you go to Prabhupada's work, you ask senior devotees, they will, you know, the Guru Sadhu Shastra is everything for us. So we don't want siddhis actually. Okay. So all these things, you know, they are explained in the Shastra very clearly. So we can easily identify. See, that is the reason I was mentioning in one class, that if someone is, you know, trying to imitate some ecstasy or, you know, some kind of feelings, so we have to see whether those feelings are permanent. They are steady in his character. If it is not steady, if he's, you know, sometimes he's showing that ecstasy, sometimes he's, you know, so angry on others, and sometimes he's chastising others, then we can understand that it's just a imitation. You know, so because unless you reach the state of nishtha, you cannot even go to the higher stages actually. You know, so steadiness is the first thing that will come in your bhakti. So it can be external, it can be through words, and it can be through mind. And then comes the stage of ruchi. So you reach steadiness first, you practice your sadhana in a steady way, chant your rounds, minimum number of rounds regularly every day, minimum number of rounds. You read minimum verses every day. You know, so everything has to be made steady. Whatever you are doing, your sadhana, everything should be steady. If you are doing seva, then it should be steady. It's not that one day you go for service and then after 1 week you go, and then in between, you know, you do all nonsense activities. So it is not like that. So steadiness means every day you have to go for service. So that is steady in the external platform. Okay, so sadhana is on the external platform, whatever we are doing. And then shravanam, kirtanam, and then smaranam is on the internal platform. Shravanam is very difficult, smaranam in Kali Yuga. It's very advanced stage. Okay, so does that help you in your this thing?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, okay. Any other question or any comment?
No, thank you.
Okay. Okay, yeah, so later, then there are examples of Shiva, Indra, Prahlad. They all pray to the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj especially says that, you know, my Lord, see, interesting prayer by Prahlad Maharaj. He says that, you know, any intelligent person should approach you, because anyone, if he approaches you, he can get his desires fulfilled also, even if he has material desires. So, see, the Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavatam, there is a very important verse. Akamo sarva kamo va moksha kamo udaravi tivrena bhakti yogena yajate purusham param. So it means that whether one is full of material desires, or whether one has no desires, or whether one is looking for liberation, in all cases one should always worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, why? Because when you approach the Lord, you know, with a desire to, you know, to serve Him or to please Him, even if you have all these desires in your heart, or if you have no desires, Krishna will take away everything. He will do the work, basically. So we just have to, you know, surrender to Him. He will do everything, actually. You know, He's like a personal trainer. You know, when we go to gym, we all get a, you know, we get some kind of trainer, and then, you know, He will train us. Personally, He will make us exercise and all that. So similarly, Krishna has His own personal reciprocation with us. You know, spiritual life, all of us. Okay, he's a trainer for each and every one of us, but he is unique for everyone. It's not that, you know, he will train us the same way for each and every devotee. The training might be different for all of them. Okay, so see, what is the purpose of the trainer? It is to give the highest bliss. See, we approach him because of material desires. So that is a part of gaining happiness. But because we are child, we don't understand what is true happiness. So the father will know that if I give 1 rupee, 2 rupee to my child, he will be temporarily happy. But if I give him a permanent palace, you know, where he can actually live the whole life. So that is the true happiness. So similarly, Krishna wants to give that kind of happiness. Okay, see, the happiness that we are talking about, the spiritual happiness, is on such a high platform, we can't even imagine actually. Because, see, that is the reason the liberation, the material desires, you know, they are all insignificant compared to what the spiritual happiness is. You know, if we reach advanced stages of bhakti, you know, asakti, bhav and prema, then we can get some realization of that happiness. You know, it is some, you know, it's such a wonderful experience that you don't want to ever compromise with anything else. Okay. Yeah, so this is what Prahlad Maharaj says, that so approach the Lord. In any case, approach the Lord. See, that is the reason in our Krishna consciousness movement when we preach. So we don't immediately tell, and Prabhupada also, you know, makes this point, that we don't immediately tell them to, you know, stop giving their bad habits or stop doing, you know, what they are doing already. We just tell them, add a factor of Krishna in your life. You know, start chanting, you know, regularly. You know, whatever, one round, two rounds a day, start reading, you know. And we tell them that continue what you are doing. Okay, see, and we cannot tell them certain things to stop immediately. If we tell them, then they will repel. They will be repelled instead of getting attracted. So, you know, so that is the reason we have to give them we have to give them Krishna in such a way that, you know, they can feel that the Lord is always there with them, you know, and he's a best friend. He's their best friend, basically. So he's helping them throughout their life. He's always going to be there. So this kind of experience we have to give them, that Krishna is supremely merciful. Whichever, you know, and you can tell them that don't worry, you know, you have material desires, don't worry. Krishna will take care of everything, you know, just whatever you like, keep doing it. But please chant also at the same time. And you know, if they start chanting, you know, and if they reach 6 rounds, 8 rounds a day, you know, if they steadily chant the rounds, then after some time, automatically they will give up all the bad habits. You know, I think every one of us must have experienced this, that once we start chanting, we do it regularly, everyday basis, all other, you know, impurities, they are automatically gone away. Someone who is a non-vegetarian, he will leave eating, you know, non-vegetarian. Someone who is drunkard, he will leave his, you know, drinking. So we have to give them Krishna first. That is the main principle. So we don't have to focus too much on the regulative principles in the beginning. Okay. So any question or any comment, anyone would like to share their experience about this?
Yeah, Prabhu. So you known me.
Okay, there is some disturbance actually. If someone can mute their phone.
Oh, wait.
If someone can identify from where the disturbance is coming, and then.
Actually, the disturbance is here only. I'm standing outside and it's very windy.
Oh, acha. Okay. Yeah. So if you can go inside and.
Okay, I'll let. Yeah, I'm. Okay, is it better?
Yeah, now it is perfect.
Yeah, so you've known me for a long time, about 7 years. We were together in school, so at Gainesville. So
yeah.
My story was like that. Before I started visiting Krishna House, so I was actually doing a lot of things. I was drinking and I was smoking, and then I was also, you know, eating non-vegetarian food and also beef when I came to the US, unfortunately. But then the first time when I went to Alachua is a temple. So for all who don't know about Alachua, it's a big, big establishment. It's gone in Florida. So the first time I went, something clicked. Like there, over there, Sakshigopal Prabhu gave me a Bhagavad Gita. And I didn't immediately start reading it, but something clicked. Then I started feeling that, no, I shouldn't. Okay, let me, chicken is fine, but let me not take beef. No one told me, like, we were not even discussing about all this. But it just, it just came into me that this is not required. I shouldn't do that. And I just stopped. And then I started associating with you folks over there. We used to cook together in the kitchen. Remember in Krishna House for the Friday programs? So much fun we had. Like, I really felt so much at home and so comfortable and so happy always interacting with all of you there. We had such a nice time. And I remember on that birthday that year, I decided that I don't think I need to have non-vegetarian food anyways. No one ever told me that you should stop. Shrikant didn't tell me. You didn't tell me. No one told me all that. But I just felt like it's not required. Not as an austerity, but it's just not required. And then, you know, I was going to Krishna House more often, and I was initially not so interested in listening. And, you know, after some time, I actually started spending time listening to the lectures, to the Friday program lectures. And then gradually, I had some, you know, trouble with my academics and all. So I went to Kalakanta Prabhu. He asked me, suggested that, would you like to try chanting? He did not tell me what I should leave and what I should not do. He said, would you like to try? He was not pressurizing me into it. But he said, you know, you've tried so many things, you can try. And then I tried. And then at that time, I used to drink. Not heavily, but I used to drink. And I remember that day, you know, after beginning to chant, a couple of weeks I chanted for like two rounds. And then gradually increased. And then one day I stopped. I felt like I won't drink anymore. But no one actually ever, like, you know, okay, in our lectures, this point was brought up that why meat eating is not good and, you know, what are the problems. But there are a lot of people listening to those lectures, right? And there are a lot of people who know these things, but still they don't feel that. But I had that strong impetus. And gradually the chanting increased, like, you know, from two rounds, three rounds for a year. And then gradually it started increasing. So, like this, what you're explaining now, I have experienced that. And just wanted to share that experience. Going from coming from rats to a position that's like, at least I would say far better than where I was.
Yeah. So thank you so much for, you know, sharing this wonderful story. Many devotees, I think they have experienced this. And, you know, like Kalakanta Prabhu is an expert teacher. You know, he is such a great soul that, you know, he sees only good thing in every living entity. So he can actually bring them to the level of, you know, pure Krishna consciousness. So, yeah, so it is like, you know, that basically, you know, we focus on that particular aspect that we want to give Krishna to them first and somehow make them feel that someone is there and the experience is also joyful. So gradually they'll give it up actually. Yeah. So thank you. So anyone has any comment or question? Okay, yeah, so then, you know, the evidences of Narayan, Gajendra, then, you know, the example of Gajendra is given. Then Narayan, you know, Vishnu to Durvas Muni, you know, that example is given. That my devotees, he says to Durvas Muni that my devotees do not want anything. They just want my pure devotional service. And whether it is hellish planet or whether it is any you know, any other thing, they don't want liberation. They just want my devotion. So then example is quoted about the Nagpatnis. They also pray the same way. Then the Shrutis. These are the Shrutis, you know, especially the Vedas. They also seek to have relationship with Lord in the conjugal ras of the gopis. So the Shrutis also pray to the Lord. Then Hayashish Panchatra says, in that, you know, the example of Narsimhadev to Prahlad Maharaj. So you see that Narsimhadev is asking benediction from Prahlad. And then Prahlad is rejecting that benediction. And he's saying that I just want one benediction, that I, you know, continue to associate with your devotees birth after birth. And then Prahlad Maharaj glorifies Hanuman, Lord Hanuman. So now, see, this is very interesting because Prahlad Maharaj is actually in the Shantaras, in the original identity, in the spiritual world. So he is in the Narsingdev planet and he is worshipping Narasimhadev in on reverence. And he is actually, you know, the example of remembrance. Okay, so he's remembering the Lord, but he's not involved in active service. So Prahlad Maharaj is an example of Shantaras. Okay. And then, so later on, Prahlad Maharaj himself is glorifying Hanuman. Why? Because he's into active devotional service. Okay, so Hanuman is in Dasyaras. So he's an example of Dasyaras. Okay, and then Sakyaras, you know, see, now we are talking about the Navvidha Bhakti, the different examples of the Navvidha Bhakti. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, then Vandanam, Archanam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. So these are the 9 processes. Prahlad Maharaj signifies remembrance. Hanuman, Dasya. Then Arjuna, see, Hanuman then glorifies Arjuna, the Pandavas. So they come into category of Sakyaras. So like that. So the Brihadava Bhagavatamrit, you know, it speaks about this in a lot of details, that who is the greatest devotee of the Lord. So then Hanuman refers to Arjuna. Then Arjuna refers to Uddhava. So then Uddhava refers to the Vraj Gopis, like that. So finally, the highest devotee are the Vraj Gopis. Okay. Like that. So now, till the point of Hanuman praying to the Lord, the same thing, that he does not want liberation. Devotees, they are praying and they are saying they don't want liberation. So it is basically the Acharya Jiva Goswami and Vishwanatha Thakur, that till this particular point, they are the proofs of devotees who do not want liberation. And now, starting from Kunti Devi, the prayers that Kunti Devi is offering, it will actually indicate pure devotional service. So basically devotional service, that we, how much we want to render devotional service. Okay, so then you see in the 4th chapter after Hanuman, there is reference of Kunti Maharani's prayers. Okay, and then Kunti Maharani is praying that, you know, we want to render devotional service. Okay, so yeah, so has anyone read, you know, the 4th chapter? Then they can understand what we are going through. So all these, the names of the personalities that you have taken, you must have also read the same thing. Right? So, you know, King Prithu, starting with King Prithu, then Jad Bharat, then Vritrasur, then comes Shiva, then Indra, then Prahlad, then Gajendra Moksham prayers, then Narayan to Durvasmani, then Nag Patnis, then Shrutis, and then example in the Hayashish Panchratra of Narasimha Dev to Prahlad Maharaj, and then Hanuman, and then Kunti Devi. Right? Okay. So now we'll come to the point of devotees, whether they accept the 4 kinds of liberation or not. Right? So I think it was Jugnu Mataji or someone else who had asked this question about the 4 kinds of liberation, whether, you know, like, we don't want that particular liberation also. But then the Acharyas, they have explained.
Babaji.
Yeah.
Sorry. Babaji, my question was about the different kinds of liberation. How does, like, a person like me wouldn't even know what I want? You know? Like, what is the kind of liberation I desire? I really don't know. Most people always say they don't know. Where you want to, where you start thinking, oh, I want to have the same opulence as the Lord. Oh, I want to be on the same planet as Him. You know, one doesn't really start their material life, or unless they're guided in some manner to be thinking like that.
Yeah, that's very good, you know, analysis. Basically, see, all these details we are knowing because we are reading the Shastra, right? We are going through it and we are recognizing. But then we have to realize one thing, that in our entire material career, material life, probably we have never heard about, you know, we have never read any Shastra, we have never participated in spiritual activity, and that is the reason why we probably do not know about these things. And second thing is that there are many people, they are inclined towards spirituality, but their main idea of spirituality is, you know, generally impersonalism. Because you see, in Christianity, in Muslim religion, and then even in India also, majority of the Indians, you know, they don't have any idea of personal God. Okay. So So impersonality is like, you know, present in all of us in to some degree, because what exactly impersonal means is to basically enjoy separately from the Lord, to become the competitors, to take the position of God, basically, right? So even if you have a tinge of material desire, we are trying to compete with the Lord. Okay, we are trying to gratify our senses. So that is also impersonalism. So this impersonalism is always very deeply rooted in everyone's heart from the time, you know, beginning of the time. So now, so we are not aware of these kind of liberations, but then there are, you know, many Indians or many foreigners, they do know about impersonalism and they have the idea of merging into the effulgence of the Lord. Most of them, because in Christianity, in Judaism, in Quran, you know, there is no concept of personal God. Okay, they have not explained that part in detail. There is no idea about that. Okay, so that is the reason why many of them, they think that liberation means, you know, you just get free from the cycle of samsara. Like, you know, the Buddhists say that, you know, we become void, you know, because they don't know, you know, what is there. You know, they don't know there is a spiritual planet and we are supposed to go there and we are having activity there. No one knows that. Okay, so that is the reason why majority of us do not know about these liberations. Now, even as devotees also, you know, we have tendency to see, our tendency is mainly to get peace, okay, not want to get any kind of suffering or any kind of anxiety, even in bhakti. That is our level, right? So then there might be desire to, there is a desire to actually go to the spiritual world, but not take any responsibility or challenges, okay, just go there, you know, enjoy. So there is a tendency to enjoy. So that tendency to enjoy is not actually favorable for bhakti. So see, that is what we are actually going to come now to the four kinds of liberations. Okay, so till now we had been talking about the fifth kind of liberation, which is a sayujya mukti, merging into the effulgence. And this particular liberation is, you know, 100% rejected by the devotees. But now the other four kind of liberation also, they are rejected by the devotees. But we'll see how it is rejected and why. Okay. So, yeah. So, does that, you know, like, hopefully, you know, what you are saying, you know, somehow it is like kind of connected.
Yeah. Thank you, Prabhuji.
That was
very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. So, see, in our concept, liberation means moksha. You know, till now that we have heard, or you know, because we had not been into Krishna consciousness earlier. So for us, it was like more of a moksha kind of a thing, you know. And then we had some basic idea that only Vishnu can give that liberation and no one else can give. And then we were aware that there is Vaikuntha planet. Okay. But now these intimate details, the intricacies of that are all revealed in the Shastra, you know. So, and interestingly, if you see, you know, the meaning of Vaikuntha is also freedom from anxiety. You know, it's a Sanskrit term which means Vaikuntha. Kunta means anxiety, and Vai means to get free from that. So you see how it is connected, you know, that, yeah, it's a place of, you know, full of enjoyment, full of bliss, knowledge, eternity, where there is no anxiety. But at the same time, the desire to enjoy with the Lord, you know, to escape responsibility or suffering. So that is not the idea of pure devotional service. And that is understood by Guru Sadhu Shastra, you know, very clearly. Okay, so yeah, so one could say that, you know, as a neophyte, we know, like, our main, for us, liberation means, you know, to go back to Godhead, but, you know, with the tendency to enjoy, like, you know, to satisfy our senses. So that is not the idea. So you will see that how liberation itself, you know, going back to Godhead means to take anxiety for the Lord. Okay, so it is not, actually, you get more anxious for the Lord when you go to the spiritual world. And that is the example of Yashoda Maiya, then Pandavas, all of them, you know, all the pure devotees. They are constantly, you see the life of gopis. If they are meeting Krishna, you know, they are anxious that, oh, he'll go away anytime. So they are always in anxiety. And if they are not meeting Krishna, they are also anxious. They are waiting for the opportunity when they will see Krishna. So each and every moment of the gopis is like, you know, it's gone in anxiety only. Okay. So this is the mood that, anxiety should be used in the service of the Lord, and that is the highest kind of devotional service. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so any question or comment till now?
Okay. Okay.
I can answer that, Prabhuji.
Yeah, please.
Because I read the chapter. So one is to merge into the existence of the Lord.
Merge into the existence of the Lord. You're talking about the Sayujya Mukti, right?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Okay, so that is the fifth liberation, actually. So we are talking about the four types of liberation. Fifth, now the Sayujya, see, till now we have discussed that Sayujya Mukti we are already rejecting. So now we are coming to the four types.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Okay, so one is to desire to live on the same planet as the Lord.
Correct, yeah.
One is to have the same features as the Lord.
Yeah.
One is to have the same opulences as the Lord.
Correct.
And the fourth one is to serve the Lord, which is what we are after, which is the highest form.
The fourth one. Okay, does anyone know the fourth one?
The Samitya?
Yeah.
This is bodily features similar to mine.
Yeah. Okay. So that is what? Okay. Let's name it now. So to attain the bodily feature of the Lord, which is what? It's called what? Sarupya Mukti. Correct?
Sarupya.
Yeah. Then the other three?
To gain personal association with Krishna.
Yeah. So that is what? Samitya. Yeah, Salokya.
Salokya.
Correct. Yeah. So Salokya, Sashti, Samipya, and Swarupya. Okay, so these are the four kind of liberation. Okay, now Rupa Goswami is saying that, so now we have rejected Sayujya, which is the fifth kind of liberation. But now, whether one should reject the four or not, that is the question. So what is the answer to this?
So it's like these are provided by the Lord. So is there any question of like rejecting them? There may be a question of, you know, not desiring them or like not endeavoring for them. Because we say devotional service is anavilashita shunyam.
Yeah.
Without any desire. But I don't know if there is any question of rejecting something that is provided by the Lord.
Okay. Sumitra, you are saying something?
I agreed with Aritrapur. He's very much right. Because there is no question of rejecting this four types of liberation.
Okay.
Because, there are the parts we have because we can move towards
Okay, so now, see, interestingly, okay, so now Aritra said and Sumitra agrees that why one should reject these four liberations, because they are provided by the Lord. Okay, so now, but we see in Bhagavatam, there are verses where devotees are playing like this, that we don't even want Salokya, Sarsishti, Samipya and Sarupya. So there are, you know, some devotees, they pray like that. So why it is like that? So any other answer, any other comment?
Because devotees want to engage in the service of Lord.
Okay, and what does that mean?
So they are not interested in these kind of liberation.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So that is the right answer, that because they are only interested to serve the Lord, and that is the reason why, whether it is hell, whether it is the material world, whether it is the spiritual world, depending on the desire of the Lord, they will accept whatever the Lord provides them. So now Aritra, what Aritra said and Sumit Prabhu also said,
is if the Lord provides, then is it then should we reject that? If the Lord wants to give us these four liberations, then should we reject or should we accept it for His service?
We should accept His service. We should accept to be in service.
Correct. So this is the purpose of accepting liberation, and you know, because the Lord Himself wants them to give them these four liberations so that they can serve Him. Okay. Oh, yeah. So, any further comments or question on this?
So, Prabhuji, if I understand this correctly, that means that a devotee of the Lord who's praying can get any of these liberations, the four types, depending on how the Lord wants it, right? Depending on how the Lord liberates him. Is that correct? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah. So that's correct. That they are dependent on the desire of the Lord. So they just want to please the Lord. That is their desire. They want only service.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the Lord decides how they would place that devotee then.
Yeah. So like that. Yeah. Okay. So now I will share the commentaries of Jiva Goswami on this, which is, you know, very clear. So what he says is, these four are not extremely contradictory to bhakti, they are contrary to a small degree, since they are accomplished with some unfavorable attitude. Okay, and what is that unfavorable attitude? If the devotee has a desire for these four, independent of the desire to please the Lord, then the bhakti is no longer anya bilasada sunyam. Okay, so you understood this point? That if the devotee has a desire for these liberations on his own, independent of the desire of, then it cannot be accepted. Okay. The favorable portion in these four is caused by the acceptance of some bhakti. Okay. And then further he says that one variety has the predominant desire for the happiness and powers, which are natural to the spiritual world. Okay, so Jiva Goswami is saying that when one attains the Lord in the spiritual world, then naturally he will get happiness and power. Okay, so the other variety has the predominant desire for service, executed by one's natural prema. So the devotees do not accept the first variety. Okay, so this is clear, right? So they want the other variety, which is the predominant desire for service, which we already discussed, which is arising from one's prema to the Lord. Okay, so if the four types of liberation are not accompanied by service, they are rejected. Because ekatva or oneness with the Lord is always without service, the devotee is always rejected. So that oneness means the impersonal liberation. So that is always rejected. Okay, and then further he says that those who are pure devotees do not even accept prem uttara mukti. By the use of the word uttara, which means predominance, a little desire for sukha and aishwarya is indicated in that prem seva. However, the devotees do not desire that portion, and therefore they reject the prem seva uttara mukti. So this particular desire to attain power and happiness, so if they want this, then that kind of prema is called prem seva uttara mukti. So that devotee does not want. They reject that portion. Okay. So then he says that the first stage of service takes the form of sadhana. By that one attains the second stage of service. This is called siddharup or perfected stage of service. For the pure devotees, those four types of liberation are achieved as secondary items by service. Okay. So the devotees do not desire the happiness and powers attained through those four types of liberation at all. That is the meaning of the verse. So they are completely satisfied, having attained the highest bliss by serving the Lord directly. Actually, service depends on being on the same planet. So you see, now, you know, he's saying that if you talk, when you talk about service, then naturally the, you know, the devotee has to be on the same planet, because if he's not in the same planet, how he can serve the Lord directly, right? So these items are accepted as part of pure prema. So if they do not desire those types of liberation, how much more they dislike the temporary rewards of the material world. So now see, this particular commentary and explanation is given, you know, and this sloka is, you know, is given by Rupa Goswami to indicate that devotees do not even want these four kinds of liberation, then what to speak of material happiness in this world? Now, how could they desire such a thing? Right? So this is the purpose of establishing this fact. Okay, so now we have discussed everything about liberation, the four kinds of liberation, and the devotees reject all the five kinds of liberations, but they can accept if the Lord wants to give them for their service. Okay. Yeah, so any comment or any question on this? So everyone has understood this, you know, about the liberation, four types of liberation, when it is rejected and why. Okay. Yeah, now, you know, further Prabhupada says something which is very interesting, and I think all devotees will become blissful. So Prabhupada says that if one has a desire, or if one has a rasa in Vaikuntha, in the spiritual world, but if one wants to serve Krishna in Goloka, then that is possible. So he can actually go to Goloka also. Interesting, right? So how we can go there? How is it possible?
Could you please repeat your question? Could you please repeat?
Yeah, Prabhupada says in the fourth chapter that at the end of, you know, after this describing all the, you know, rejection of liberations, he says that a devotee who is situated in his rasa in Vaikuntha, as a devotee of Narayan, if he desires to serve Krishna in Goloka, if he gets that tendency, you know, then he can be promoted to Goloka also. So is something very interesting. So how is it possible? See, why this particular point Prabhupada has raised in you know, in this sequence is because after, you know, like he explains that devotees who are solely attached to the Lord does not desire except any five, because there is some desire for Sukh and Aishwarya, and devotee of Krishna in Vrindavan is the topmost. Or in other words, basically the you know, Rupa Goswami and Prabhupada is saying that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. Krishna is the Bhagavan Swayam. So his excellence will surpass all others. Okay, so that is the reason why now he is referring to. See, when you hear about the Lord, when you hear about Krishna and how his characteristics and qualities excel even those of Narayan, right? So then naturally a desire is there to associate with the Lord, associate with the original personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is in Vrindavan, right? So you, and you know, there are then in, you know, in the you know, there is a long, you know, evidence given by Jiva Goswami about this, that how Krishna is the topmost, how Krishna Vrindavan is the topmost, you know, the best God, you know, you can find anywhere in an entire, you know, spiritual planet. So that is the reason this point is raised, that if any devotee who is already situated in Vaikuntha, then he can transfer to Goloka also. So how is that possible? Anyone knows how that is possible? Because, see, we also know one thing, that once we attain liberation, like, you know, once we go back to Godhead, then we are always satisfied in our rasa. Like, you know, Hanuman. Hanuman, when when in Gaur Leela, when he came as Murari Gupta, so that time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to entice him with Vrajprem, you know, to worship Krishna of Vrindavan. But Murari Gupta, he could not, you know, he tried that, you know, he was not able to leave the service of Lord Ramchandra and worship Krishna, was so attached to Lord Rama. So he could not do that. Okay, and he wanted to commit suicide, because if he would have started, like, you know, he felt that he would have Lord Ram, and if he were not able to follow the orders of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then he would have thought that I have disobeyed the orders of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he saw Lord Ramchandra in Chaitanya. Okay, so he was completely bewildered, and he wanted to commit suicide. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he heard about his, you know, about his intention, he was very happy. He was praising him that, Murari Gupta, you are actually truly Hanuman, and because you are completely dedicated, sold out to Lord Ramchandra. So he was praising him for that. Okay, so normally it is said that any devotee in any rasa in the spiritual world, they are completely satisfied. So generally they don't transfer their, you know, rasa, or they don't jump to higher planetary system, or higher to lower is out of question. But from lower to higher, there is a possibility. Okay, but still everyone is like satisfied. Maybe rare case, like, you know, maybe 0.001% of the case might want to go to Krishna Loka, like that, or to the upper planetary, you know, or to the upper spiritual planet. So then there is a method how to go there. It's not that, you know, you just directly take a Vaikuntha airplane and, you know, go to Goloka. You cannot, you know, catch a flight like that, because it is mentioned in the Shastra that in order to enter Vraj, you have to follow in the footsteps of the Vrajvasis. So what happens when any devotee in his constitutional rasa, as a servant of Vishnu, if he develops a desire, if he hears from a devotee of Krishna, or he associates with devotees of Krishna, somehow he happens to accidentally meet them and hears the glories of the Lord, then what happens? Already, because he has attained Vaikuntha, so he has attained Prema, right? So then, if he wants to go to Goloka, then first he comes down to the material world and he participates in the pastimes of Krishna in this material world, in the Bhoma Vraj, which is in this material world. And after assisting and following the Vrajvasis and serving them for, you know, till Krishna disappears, all the Vrajvasis disappears, after getting trained in that service, then he is promoted to Goloka. Okay, so from Vaikuntha, you know, if someone wants to go to Vraj, to Goloka in the spiritual planet, he has to come down to the material Bhoma Vraj. And then from there he's trained, and from that training, then he will attain the higher Goloka in the spiritual realm. Okay, so this is the process how one can go from Vaikuntha to Goloka. And one can change even one's rasa depending on the attraction. Okay, so now, and after that, you know, at the end of the chapter 4, Prabhupada says that devotees of Krishna are the topmost, and Vrindavan is the topmost, and Krishna in Vrindavan is the topmost. So why? That we'll see in the next class. And there is a lot of evidences for this, which Jiva Goswami gives from Shastra, that why this is claimed, you know, that Krishna is super excellent. So what are the four qualities that Krishna has? Additional qualities compared to the Narayan, or, you know, the Vishnu Tattvas. What are the four additional qualities? We have discussed this earlier. Anyone remembers?
I always remember that one, the playing of the flute.
Nowhere, yeah, so
Lord Vishnu does not play the flute anywhere. Venu Madhurya. That is one.
Correct.
Leela Madhurya, yeah, is another.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
I'll keep it.
Yeah.
One is about the beauty.
One is what?
About the beauty of the Lord.
Beauty, yeah. So that is Roop Madhurya. And the last one? last one is Prem Madhurya, the prema of Krishna and the Brajvasis. So these are super excellent qualities which are present in Krishna only. None of the expansions have these qualities. So Krishna has 64 qualities and Vishnu has 60 qualities. Okay, then Shiva, how many qualities he has? Anyone remembers? Percentage wise also, you can say.
I think 55.
65, no. 65, see, Krishna has 64 qualities. So how can Shiva have 65 qualities?
55. No, 55.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm sorry. Yeah, so I think maybe 55. And that brings the percentage to 84%. So Krishna is 100%. Vishnu is 96%. Shiva is 84%. And what about Brahma?
Brahma is having 50.
Yeah, so I mean I don't exactly remember the quality number, but I know I'm sure about the percentage. So Brahma is 78% of Krishna. Okay. So Brahma is a Jeev Tattva and we are also Jeev Tattvas. And if you all know that the first position that we took when we come to the material world was the position of Brahma. So we were all Brahmas in our many, many past lives before the first starting point. And from the position of Brahma, we have fallen down to this particular species.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah.
Is it this thing that, what is that four qualities that Krishna never gives to anyone? Last four qualities.
No, Krishna, see, Krishna has these unique qualities. It's not that he does not give to anyone. It is, we are talking about Vishnu Tattva here.
No, last four qualities, means highest four qualities is there, that Krishna is anyone. Because if it's me, then that personality will become supreme personality of it. That's why Krishna doesn't give. So what is that four qualities?
No. See, we have to understand this, that Krishna is Krishna. No one can compare with him. So Krishna does, these four qualities are unique in him. So none of the Vishnu Tattvas also have this quality in them. And Shiva Tattva also does not have this quality. Yeah, so that is what we discussed. That Surya, playing of the flute. So have you seen any Vishnu playing flute? No. Right?
No.
So then... Then second is Rup Madhurya. Have you see, compared to the beauty of Krishna, does anyone is more attractive than him? No. Rup Madhurya. Then Leela Madhurya. Leela Madhurya, but the activities of the Lord are very, very unique. You know, the pastimes of the Lord. You see the pastime, you read the pastimes of Krishna and you read the pastimes of Vishnu. There is so much awe and reverence in Vishnu's pastime. There is not so much intimacy. But Krishna's pastime, so much intimacy and so much variety. So Leela Madhurya. And the last one is Prem Madhurya. So you see, in Krishna Leela, the level of prema that Krishna, Radharani and the gopis have, it exceeds those of Vaikunthas also. The intensity and the highest level of prema. Mohanakya Mahabhav, Madanakya Mahabhav. So after, see... Once we reach the spiritual world, the minimum level we attain is prema, right? From Saddha to prema, those stages. So prema is a minimum qualification to enter spiritual world. But now if we go to Goloka, so then the quality of sneha, then man, then pranaya, then bhav, then mahabhav. And mahabhav has two divisions, that rudbhav and adirudbhav. And among, you know, that Adirudbhav has Mohanakya Mahabhav and Madanakya Mahabhav. So that quality is only present in Srimati Radharani. That Mahabhav, Adirud Mahabhav is only present in Srimati Radharani. None of them have. So you see, in Vaikuntha, it is limited to Prema. Okay, but in Goloka, it reaches further stages of advancement. Okay. Yeah, so have you understood these points? You know, the four unique qualities of Krishna, and that is why he's the supreme personality of God. Yeah, and we are Jiva. We have 78% qualities of Krishna. So yeah, so all of you have understood these things. How to go from? Sorry. Yeah, how to go from Vaikuntha to Golok, and the super excellent qualities of the Lord. Okay, so yeah, so any question or any comment, any final question or comment? And you see, there is also one very amazing unique quality of the Lord, of Krishna, of Vrindavan, is that only he can liberate demons. Okay, he can only liberate demons. None of the other incarnations can liberate demons. Liberate means, liberation here means, attain their final swarup in the spiritual world. Okay. Yeah, so any final comments, any question?
I have one question.
Yeah.
That Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharma and Parikrishna Namaskam, Padam Raja, means surrender unto me only. I can liberate you from all the things, all types of things. But that Krishna, as well as saying in Bhagavad Gita, that Manishchanam, Manishchanam, Sahasresu, Kachi Jasya, Siddhe. Manishchanam, Sahasresu, Kachi Means from thousands of men, only one cent, then can come to my home, back to God. So why is that? I'm having very much confusion in that. Because if you surrender unto me, then I will take home back to God. But in second case, you say, the minister on prayer question.
Yeah, so this is correct, because we are one of the rare species, all of us. We are rare species actually. Manushyanam sarasyasu katchilyadi siddhaye, yatadamavi siddhanam, kaschin mam vedi tatvaya. Right? So we are rare species, there is no doubt about it. And you know what, I will tell you one more thing, that in fact we are much more rare species than when Krishna also came. Why? Because we are under Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's intimacy is the confidentiality of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very unique, extremely unique. And those who are under Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they are still more rare species. So even someone who knows Krishna perfectly, but he might not know Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that is the reason Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says, so we'll end with Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's quote today, because today is his disappearance. So I just recollected his quote. He says that if you worship Krishna for 1,000 lifetimes, then you might attain him. But if you worship Krishna for 1,000 lifetimes, there is no guarantee you might attain Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay. So this is the rarity of, being a part of followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Extremely rare, And we'll discuss that in our Chaitanya Charitamrita class, in detail about why it is like that. See, if you consider the population of the world, now when Prabhupada was here, when he was not there, when ISKCON was not there, how many of them knew Krishna, or how many of them worshipped or surrendered to Krishna, or how many practiced Krishna consciousness? Very rare, right? Very rare souls. So that is why we understand, that's how we understand that Manushyanam Sahasresu, that after, so many living entities in the planet, hardly one will know me. Okay. So that is obviously true, because to understand Krishna is a big thing. It requires a lot of qualification. But because of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, that same Krishna is easily understood through his representatives. And because Srila Prabhupada is the commander-in-chief of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's army, he has actually bestowed this mercy to every town and village of the world by the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is there, he is overriding Krishna also. Okay. Krishna says that Sarva Dharma Paritaja, first surrender to me, then I will give you reciprocation, or I will take your sinful reactions. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is awarding the same Krishna Prem to each and every one of us freely. because of his magnanimity, Audharya nature. Okay, because he is in the bhava of Srimati Radharani, the most merciful, bhava. Okay, so that is the reason why, because of Prabhupada, we know now ISKCON, we know what is bhakti, we know about Krishna, and our, the Goswamis, all of them, they have written so many literature, it's a vast ocean, and we know so much about it now. Okay, so Raj Vidya, Raj Goyam. Pavitram Idam Uttamam. It's a Raj Vidya, a king of knowledge, and it is secret of all knowledge. But that secret is broken by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it is freely distributed now in Kali Yuga. So you can imagine, when Krishna was there in Dwapar Yuga, this was not freely distributed. He always wanted qualification. But when same Krishna came in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's form, he has broken the barriers and he has freely distributed this nectar to everyone. Okay, so someone who is extremely, extremely, extremely fortunate, he will come under the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, as I said, I think in the CC class, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the final culmination of all avatars. And that is the reason he is the greatest avatar, even greater than Krishna himself. Okay, so any last question or comment?